Welcome to Entrepreneurs, the Playbook. I'm David Meltzer, and I have the dynamic couple, Cass and Mike Lazaro, co-founders of not only golf.com, but Buddy Media. Welcome, my all-star friends, to the Playbook.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate having you both here, and I'm super excited not just to learn about what it takes as a couple to have such successful business exits, and you obviously understand how to utilize and break through brands, but your book really has intrigued me. I've been married almost 28 years. I have four children, and I always say that in my marriage, and I think everyone has this in their lifetime, everyone's married three times. This is my philosophy. It may not be true, but you're either, some people are married like me to the same person three times in this lifetime, and other people have different people they're married to in that period of time. But I do think as people mature, these intimate relationships mature as well, and they do change. Your upcoming book is a love story. Just like Jerry Maguire, by the way. Most people think Jerry Maguire is a sports film. It's a love story.
It's a love story. Of course. You complete me. Yes.
Yes, exactly. That's why all men and women love Jerry Maguire. But talking about great titles, I thought my new book, Don't Do Business with Dicks, had a great title. But Shoveling Shit, a love story about the entrepreneur's messy path to success. And that has to be one of the truer statements in all of book history, the messy path to success. Give me an idea as a couple how you have learned from this messy path and what those lessons that really have changed your life together.
Sure. I'll take a stab and then Mike, you can go. So, you know, we've worked together. We've been married 25 and a half years, working together almost 29. And we've learned a lot about each other, about what it takes to be an entrepreneur. And we thought it was something that we wanted to do to like make a big impact with entrepreneurs. We're always helping. We're always giving back time. And our support was to write this book. It's got 50 plus cheat codes. And I'll tell you, it was very interesting because we think that the way most co-founders really work is if they don't overlap in skills and they're not in the same lane. And this was a time when we were in the same lane. And so it was interesting writing it because we were doing the same thing. Usually we say divide and conquer. So I'll leave it at that. Mike, what do you want to add?
Yeah, anything that is worth doing starts with epic uncertainty. And let's just say I wasn't very popular with what they call the ladies. And I went to a wedding just after I graduated Northwestern University that fall. And I saw this beautiful woman across the room who was wearing a red dress I knew was in the internet business. And I almost didn't ask her. I almost was just too riddled with fear. I was sweating. My hands were wet. And I walked over and I somehow got it out. Will you dance with me? And those five words changed my life forever. And it was right after I had artificial heart valve put in. And I went through a series of just kind of shocks to my system. Most shocking was that this woman would dance with me. We did what all great people who are dating do, is we started a company right away, which looking back, we're like, well, how did that happen? But the partnership that we've had has been one based on trust, based on communication, and it's not that dissimilar to other co-founder relationships. Even though we're having sex unlike other co-founders, we have to fight well, we have to communicate well, we have to get on the same page and know that we're going to the same place. And so it's been the greatest relationship I could have ever imagined and very profitable thanks to her operating abilities. But let's not kid ourselves. It's never easy with any co-founder relationship. How you fight is very important. And we've been very lucky.
And in that communication, there's a theme throughout your success, which is brutal honesty.
And right.
your book, it reeks of brutal honesty, and a lot of people don't like it. I always say, to be a great parent, I have to be annoying, which is brutally honest. That's really annoying, but also repetitive, because people don't learn.
Right.
Children, the first time you tell them to get their shoes off the stairs, especially, they're just not going to listen to you. So you have to be annoying. What role does brutal honesty play, not just in the marriage, but also in the businesses that you've created and invested in? Many successful, and I'm sure the failures aren't written in the bio, so, but I'm sure they're there as well, that you've had some losses along the way. And then within writing a book, which I've done, it's very hard to be vulnerable and brutally honest in a book about the shit that really goes on, especially if you are writing a book about the shit. So, you know, what role does that brutal honesty play in each of these different nuances of your relationship?
I think the honesty part, the kind of transparency at no cost, like you're going to be so brutally honest, I think that turns into something that's really comforting over time. And when Mike and I first started working together, there was just no other way. Like Mike always says that I'm not passive aggressive, I'm aggressive aggressive. So that is comforting. He always says he knows where he stands. And we
for better or worse.
For better or worse.
I know I have a wife like that. That's awesome.
Right. But you know, you take that with you into a company. And I think what happens is you start to empower people because it becomes the sticky glue, the like super glue that holds people together, because they don't have to worry about surprises. They can worry about, they can just sit there and do their job. They know that we're going to be honest and tell them the truth, whether we're having a good day, whether something's, the shit's hit the fan or whatever it is. So I think that in the long run, it's been kind of the core, like one of our core values is to be brutally honest with everyone, every relationship.
And do you take that brutal honesty well, either of you, or did it take time to not have a need to be offended?
It took time. And let's just say that I wasn't as comfortable with it as my bride. And I learned the hard way that it's much better to get the elephant in the room and not to shine the turd, which is one of the cheat codes of the book. Do not shine the turd. If it's a turd, call it a turd and then figure out how to get rid of it, you know, what to do about it. And what would happen is early on, I just, you know, I'm in charge more of sales and vision and, you know, raising money. And so I'd go out, I'd like try to sell. I wouldn't sell anything, like this golf.com early internet. And Cass and the board would be like, how's sales doing? Oh, it's incredible. It's like, and then they look at the numbers. They're like, it's not. And we had one investor who's a hedge fund guy in New York after we bought the URL back and everything. And I remember he just slammed his hand on the table, said, don't shine the turd.
Nice.
I don't care about bad news. I hate surprises. And so honesty has just been an easier way to go. And you feel better because when you're not being honest and transparent, it eats you up inside and you worry about it. And when you live kind of more transparently and share everything, you get it out. There's something therapeutic about it.
So true. And I actually went to therapy because I had a need to be offended because my wife was so brutally honest. And my therapist told me, it's like, you got to tell her how you feel, Dave. And so I told my wife, she said something that was true and brutally true. And I'm like, hey, I just want to let you know, this is the way it makes me feel. And she's like, I really don't care how it makes you feel.
I think Cass has that same playbook.
I fired the therapist. Now, inside the book as well, you know, there's a certain quandary of being an entrepreneur. And I get this question as an executive coach at the highest level. And it's when to pivot, when to persist, and when to walk away. And everybody has this question in a relationship, but especially in entrepreneurship and in business. What is your philosophy in knowing when to do these three things that everybody is always losing sleep over? Let's just put it that way.
I mean, basically, we just believe the pivot is not something to fear. It's something to embrace. It's easy to classify kind of bad news as bad news, but entrepreneurs know you're one step closer to succeeding. right? You may have to get it wrong a few times in order to get it. And if you look at the best companies and brands we use today, they've all pivoted, right? Like Instagram, which we're both using, started as Bourbon, which was like this four square thing. And, you know, remember Blockbuster, right? They should have been Netflix. And then Netflix should have been Blockbuster, but they decided to do online streaming. And, you know, BMW made airplane engines. So every company has to evolve. And our mentality is that there are three things you could do. You basically can continue to doing more of what isn't working, which frankly, humans are hardwired to do. So if it's not working, we justify it, right? Oh, we don't have the right people. We told the investors this. What's going to happen if we have to tell the world that we have to pivot? You can fold the business, which doesn't make sense. Like Michael Dell, never give up, right? That's an entrepreneur. Or you could stop doing what's not working, create a new plan, and change direction. That takes leadership, which you know, you're an expert in. And it takes the ability not to get people to jump without fear, but to jump with this uncertainty and with this fear around them. But, you know, Buddy Media, which we sold for close to $1 billion, we had to pivot three times.
Anything to add, Cass?
I would say, you know, along with what Mike said, you know, when the good entrepreneurs really know how to focus, and if they focus and they know what their goals are, then the next step would be to put the actual success metrics next to those goals. So like, okay, I want to be the number one social media marketing platform. Okay, so then what are the goals to get there? And then what does success look like? And I'm sure you do this with everything you do so that you can look back and then say, is it working? Like, what are the data points that can help me decide if I need to pivot? Well, one is, are you hitting the success metrics?
So true. Now, one of the other things that has recently climbed into my Excel sheet is an emotional expense column, especially for my employees. I think people aren't aware of the emotional expense. And you guys talk about the hidden cost of entrepreneurship, which is that emotional expense. Right. And where are some of the areas that are most expensive in this hidden cost of entrepreneurship?
So there's definitely, you know, burnout is big with entrepreneurs. It's literally, people think it's this like glorified, oh my God, I get to do whatever I want. It's so glamorous and everything. At the end of the day, you tend to be shoveling alone or with just one other founder. And you tend to get a lot of family and friends who are complaining about you, that you're not showing up, you're not staying long enough, they don't hear from you. So there is a lot for an entrepreneur to stress about, including the everyday job of shoveling, but it gets lonely. You know, they say it gets lonely at the top. I think entrepreneurs get lonely shoveling.
Love that. And for you, Michael, what's your number one emotional expense or hidden cost in your entrepreneurial journey?
So for me, it's been relationships. You know, we started these companies around each of our kids' births. And so we have three kids, and the last three companies were basically started around their births. And there's only so much you can do. You can do anything you want as an entrepreneur. So if you want to have kids, but you can't also go out and party and go travel the world and do all this other stuff. And so for many, many years, it was work and it was family. And we had very few close friends. I've had the same friends forever from Northwestern, from high school. And I think now that we're moving, you know, into the next 50 years, it's all about impact. And the greatest thing about writing this book is helping entrepreneurs deal with the loneliness, with the imbalanced life that we've dealt with. Because the book is not just about how to grow a business, it's how to grow a life. And that's what we're most proud of. What's the value of having money if your life is miserable, right? Especially if you go through a few divorces and you have no friends and you're overweight, right? So we've been able to help, and very simple things. We have a cheat code about relationships. Put date nights on the calendar. Every Wednesday and Saturday, we had a standing date night with a babysitter who we paid regardless of whether we used her because we may be too tired or I may be on the road selling, right? If you don't put it on the calendar, it ain't happening.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of this book is about how we survived liking each other and with kids who I think like us and with the life we've built, which if you asked growing up in the suburbs of DC, this would be my life, I would have been like, there's no way. Like, yes, please.
Yeah. It's amazing. The dream life that we get to live, there's still the aspect is we look backwards. I always say, if somebody would have told me what I had to go through in order to get to where I am today, I'm not sure, even though probably one of the most consistent, persistent people that I know, and I strive to be better, but I'm not sure I would do it, which is a blessing. One of the other things, these non-negotiables that you talk with are so important. You know, I spend a minimum amount of time with my family every day. I have non-negotiable behaviors with my wife, especially as my kids got older. The time got down to 2 minutes a day minimum, but I do spend a minimum of 2 minutes a day with my four kids. And 2 minutes a day is worth more than 2 hours on a Saturday. Lastly, one of the other interests in the book is understanding, because you guys have done this, raised and invested so much capital. And there's a lot of lessons in dealing with hundreds of startups. And we've invested in similar companies together. Fortunately, a couple of them have done really well. But the idea that founders actually can pick the correct investor is a nuance that you guys talk about. How do you fix a founder that may just be more desperate or unaware of the expense of picking the wrong investors?
So we've been fortunate to be able to pick investors. Many companies can't, and many founders can't. Do what you got to do to fund your business. If you need money, the best way to fund your business is customers. So get customers on board if you can. We picked businesses, software that we had to invest before we sold. But we love customer-funded businesses. And with AI platforms and lower costs, you can do that more and more. But the single biggest cheat code I can give to entrepreneurs is look at fundraising as a long-term, always-on relationship-building effort. So it's not about meeting someone and saying, give me money, because investors, they smell desperation. Show up and saying, David, I'd love for you to invest, but we're not raising money now. How can I help you? What's on your plate that I can help with? I'm an expert in AI. I'm an expert in this. I know people here. Is there anything I can do for you? And just start building that relationship. When I look at our core investors, from Howard Lindzen, Roger Ehrenberg, Peter Thiel, Mark Pincus. They all started with me helping them, right? Like Howard Lindzen, I helped him sell a company, Golf Now. I'd been in the golf business and he was kind of a menschy guy. We loved each other. When we started Buddy Media, I just gave him a call and we already knew each other, right? So don't look at it as like, I got to raise money by Saturday. I'm just going to spam the world with emails. Any cold email I get that seems desperate goes right to trash.
Yeah, I would assume the frequency of that. And Cass, just to finish up, you know, I have some transition statements that are guideposts for me in what I call a divine direction. And all my relationships, even with my children, I'm constantly working through questions and suggestions to get me to understand, would it help you if I did this? Even to my kids, do you know anyone that could help me? I think a lot of people discount the joy and the value when somebody is capable of helping us and we allow them that capability. And I think there's a lot of cheating going on with successful actualizing people. They don't allow people to feel good around them because they don't take advantage of their capabilities, especially our children. Have you a different spin on my generality of this divine direction of relationships?
I actually don't. And I love that you brought this up because there's a lot of people that I've met in my lifetime who want to discount someone based on their age, experience level, you name it. And one of the things that I've always loved to do is get all sorts of voices in a room. I'm not saying that I am crowdsourcing decisions at all, but I do believe that everyone's voice has a benefit. There is something important that they're saying. And that's why I love building these companies, because when you think about culture, you really are moneyballing everybody, right? Talk about a great movie. You are trying to put the best people in the best position. The only way you can do that is if you're open-minded about everybody's voice and what they have to offer, because everyone has a different strength. And if you can put them in the right spot, man, you're going to get over home plate every single time.
And we'll get over home plate as long as we're shoveling the shit. And we need in June, everybody pre-order Shoveling the Shit. It is a love story about the entrepreneur's messy path to success. Remember, the fastest way to get to where you want to be is find someone that's already there and ask them for directions. They've given you the Thomas Brothers guide for all you old people out there, how to get to where you want to be, or better, guaranteed you need to shovel the shit. And I cannot wait to read this book. Pre-order it. And Cass, Mike, and Mike Lazaro, I cannot wait to get together in person. I will have multiple invitations, not obligations. And hopefully me and my wife can take you out for a date.
I would love it.
Because I know as much as you may or may not want to go to dinner with me, you definitely want to meet my wife. She will get along famously.
We would love it. Thank you.
We love dinner. It's one of our top three meals.
That's so good. Well, what a pleasure and a privilege it is to learn from the best. Check out Shoveling Shit. Check out Cass and Mike Lazaro. They've walked the walk and now they're writing the right and talking the talk. Thanks for joining me. This is David Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, the Playbook.